This is Prosteotropia. This is the audio that accompanies Phonovision versus Cherry Auction. We're talking about indirect infringement. We've talked a little bit about indirect infringement or secondary liability with regards to trade secrets. So this would be the person who hired the Christophers to go take the pictures. We talked a little bit about it when we talked about about patent law and the patent on the the laser exercising cat patent, and would the person who sells the laser be liable or not. We're going to get into this a little bit deeper in copyright law because it just plays a bigger role in copyright law, where we'd like to go after this intermediary as opposed to going after the end direct infringer. And we talked already a little bit about direct infringers in the secondary liability context when we talked about Sony versus Universal and fair use of the direct infringer. In the next recording we'll talk about, or two recordings from now, we'll talk about Sony versus Universal and indirect infringement. But let's start with Phonovision versus Cherry Auction. So the first slide I've got is a reproduction of the preamble to Section 106. And if you remember, Section 106 is the section that deals with different types of rights that you get if you have a protectable copyright. Right to reproduce, right to make derivative works, right to distribute, etc. And the one thing that we don't have in copyright law that we did have in patent law is that we don't have explicit secondary liability or indirect infringement statutes. In patent law, we had 271B, the inducement statute, 271C, contributory infringement statute. All we have statutorily in copyright law is this authorized language, that not only do I have the exclusive right if I'm the copyright holder to have these exclusive rights to make a copy, I also have the exclusive right to authorize others. And so if somebody authorizes others without my permission, the copyright holder's permission, I'm able to go after them. And so people sometimes use this preamble as the hook to say, okay, see, there's a secondary liability regime in copyright law. It turns out that really the secondary liability regime in copyright law is mainly found in the case law. And it mimics at least partially what patent law does, although it varies from it in just a little bit. So you know, the second slide, we talk about Phonovision versus Cherry Auction. So Cherry Auction is a live auction, not necessarily just even an auction, but a flea market, swap meet, where you can go and buy various things on the weekend. It might even be throughout the day. If you want to click on the actual picture there, you can actually open up a link to Cherry Auction's website. They're still kind of hemming and hawing and going nowadays. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, they changed the video to private. It was a video about Cherry Auction. Well, shoot, I should have checked that before I did this. I apologize. Well, you can search it up on your own. And so Phonovision is a record label. It's a record label that mainly produces Spanish music. And this won't shock you that at a swap meet, there are people selling bootleg CDs, essentially copies of Phonovision records or tapes or CDs without Phonovision's permission. So if you go to the next slide, there's a reproduction of Los Humildes Siempre. I know Siempre means always. I don't know what Humildes means. But this would be the kind of CD that would be copied without Phonovision's permission. But here, Phonovision is actually suing Cherry Auction, not the individual who made the copy or the individual who bought the copy or those who might be distributing it. So if you go to the third slide, when we think about indirect infringement or secondary liability, we always need a direct infringer. So if we go back to patent law, we would need someone who actually practices the methods of using the laser to exercise the cat, even if we're trying to sue the laser manufacturer. So, right, who's the direct infringer here? The direct infringer here is the person who's selling at the swap meet. That's a distribution violation. They probably also made a copy, so that's a violation of 106.1 as well. And Phonovision could go after those individuals, which certainly here maybe they would want to, although you can only imagine they probably change from time to time. They probably don't have as much money in their pockets, and they're a little harder to kind of nail down. But instead of suing them, they're suing Cherry Auction, right? And what is the theory of liability for Cherry Auction? Cherry Auction is not the one who's actually making the copies or distributing the copies. They're secondarily liable or indirectly liable by facilitating this type of infringement from taking place. And you can think of why PhotoVision would like to get a judgment against Cherry Auction as opposed to these individual distributors. If I can get Cherry Auction on the hook, I've got a deeper pocket. I now have maybe a little bit more efficacy in my judgment. So if Cherry Auction now has to police itself, it'll have to go after all the people at its auctions and stop them from doing the things that we don't want them to do. And so I might get a much bigger bang for my buck. I always think about indirect liability as kind of this reverse class action, right? Instead of having a lot of plaintiffs, you in some ways have a lot of defendants, but the defendants are proxied under Cherry Auction, this indirect infringer that's taking place here. And so then if you go to the next slide, you can see the different types of indirect infringement theories that are available under copyright law. We're going to talk about an arguable third when we get to the MGM versus Grokster case. But the two that are clearly present in copyright law, one is very similar to the one that we have in patent law. One is a new one. And so the new one first, this idea of vicarious liability and vicarious infringement. And you might have actually had this in tort law. It has two requirements that are articulated in the PhotoVision case. First, you have to have the right and ability to control the infringement. For me to go after someone for secondary liability, that person I'm suing to be liable for indirect infringement, they have to have the right and ability to control the infringing activity. So articulating it with regards to this case, the theory is, does Cherry Auction have the ability to control the behavior of those who are actually selling at the swap meet? And the court says they certainly do. This is not like a landlord who merely has rented an apartment or a facility and said, do whatever. Here I'm actually renting these booths at this auction or swap meet every weekend or every day, etc. And so I clearly have the ability to control what people sell at my swap meet. This is not like me just saying, okay, here's your facility, do whatever you want to with it. I can specifically say you can or can't sell something this day at the swap meet. So they clearly have the right and ability to control. And then the second part of vicarious infringement is I also, as the indirect infringer, have to derive direct financial benefit from the infringement. I need to basically make more money because the infringement's occurring. And so here, right, if we apply it to this case, the court says, look, there clearly is at least a factual issue as to whether Cherry Auction makes more money because either more people come to the auction, turns out you had to kind of pay for admission to the swap meet to enjoy it, right? Or Cherry Auction gets to rent more booths out because there are people who want to use those booths to sell infringing items. And if we don't either have the attraction of bootleg CDs or bootleg CD seller, then that's less money that's made by Cherry Auction. So we have a better direct connection between the money made and the infringement that's occurring by either increasing demand for the auction, right, or increasing the number of people who want to participate in the auction or the swap meet. So the court says, look, there's enough here to say that a vicarious infringement case could be made. This one's new. We didn't see this one in patent law. The other theory that's presented on this slide, this is slide 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, slide 5, I should have numbered the slides, I apologize, is contributory infringement. Now, we saw this with 235 U.S.C. 271C, and the case law on the copyright side really mimics the case law on the patent side, even though we don't have a statute. The first thing is I have to knowingly that there's infringement taking place. And here, Cherry Auction did. Cherry Auction knew people were selling bootleg CDs. They had been actually notified about this by PhotoVision and others and knew that this was taking place. And then I have to materially contribute to the infringing conduct. So does Cherry Auction materially contribute to the infringement from occurring? And the court kind of basically says, well, look, if we didn't have the booth, right, would we have the infringement, right? Well, if we don't have an option, an exchange or booth place that's there and provide parking and allow for advertising, et cetera, then we wouldn't have the infringement taking place. And so we do have this kind of material contribution to the infringement that's occurring in this particular case. And so we've got enough to show that Cherry Auction is actively providing an environment and market for these bootleg or counterfeit record sales or CD sales to survive, right? They're not just merely a passive provider. They're actively kind of engaging or helping this stuff from happening by providing parking, et cetera, to the people that are there. And so we have enough here for contributory infringement. And the final point I want to make before kind of leaving Phonovision versus Cherry Auction is I still need a direct infringer. It's easy in this case that we've got a direct infringer. We're going to take a look at Sony in the next recording. There it's tougher because we've got the fair use defense that we'll talk about. But I need that direct infringer. It's easy here because I've got the counterfeit for providing these kind of exact copies of the copyrighted CDs. But it might be harder in other cases.